Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy post-4th of July, happy Independence Day to everybody. It's Sunday, July 6th, 2025, and we are continuing our series with special guest, Upper West Side Trojan. We're going to talk about more stuff. It was a great response to the last podcast. How are you doing?
I'm great today. How about yourself?
Doing pretty well. Okay, well, let's hop into it. And I know we didn't get a chance to talk about defense in the last pod. Before we get to that, I think there's probably a place where we don't quite see eye to eye on offensive line stuff under Lincoln Riley. And this gets a little tricky because each consecutive season that Lincoln Riley has been at USC, 2022, 2023, 2024, he is running. So in 2022, he ran the ball almost 34 times a game, passing it about 37 times a game. The following season, he ran it only, this 2023, only 28 times a game. So you see a drop off there, less overall plays, passing the ball 35 and a half times a game. And last season, 28 rushes per game, but 41 passes. So we got more plays per game, but we're just filling those with passing. So we're running less and less. There's been concern about the performance of the offensive line. I would definitely concur on that last season, when, especially on the pass blocking. But, you know, you expressed concerns as well, but you'd also said online that you didn't think that – you said USC hadn't had a I think you called it a – do you call it a great offensive line or a really good offensive line since Pete Carroll was the coach? So yes. I'll let you just kind of – rather than put words in your mouth – you kind of state your position and you can kind of flesh it out.
Sure. I mean, you've heard me talk about this a lot, and that is, it's about philosophy. So to me, if you're not a physical style, a physical brand of coach, you're not going to run a physical brand of offense or defense. Now, I know that Lincoln Riley did do more with running backs at Oklahoma. Probably had a little bit more talent there because Bob Stoops left the cupboard, you know, fairly full. He's a good recruiter over there. They did have maybe a little bit better overall roster than he had coming in here. So that could be part of it. Or he may have just had such, not just a better roster, such good players that he could do it. Or maybe it was the fact that he had a really great offensive line coach who was older and he let him take over. I don't know what the reason is, but everyone's talked about this, not just me, in the fact that he's kind of seems like a trend over his course of what he's been doing, his career, is to run the ball less and less. I do think there, I don't want to get into the philosophy of to why. I do think there's a reason why. The simple reason is that he's so good with passing offenses. Why ever run the ball? It's so easy for him to complete a 7-yard pass, but it is hard for even Nick Saban to get 7 yards out of every rush. So why ever do it? There's a whole philosophy behind why you want to do that, and you want to go and get 4 yards running the ball versus trying to get 5 or even 7 or 10 or 12 passing. That's for another podcast, but I think the philosophy is just not there. I don't think he believes in the run, because coaches that believe in the run, run the ball. If they fail, they run the ball. If they partially succeed, they run the ball. If they do well, they run the ball. It's just, it's in their DNA. They believe you win by running more than by passing, which is, I also kind of concur and hold that philosophy. At the same time, it doesn't mean that I think you shouldn't have a very sophisticated passing game. But I still believe in kind of run to set up the pass and or, you know, having a little bit more balance. The other part of it is what I've noticed with Lincoln Riley since he's been at USC, like we just talked about, like you just mentioned, a little bit of a downtrend, like running a little bit less each year. And then there are games where he runs it a fair amount of times, maybe against weaker teams. And there's one specific thing that happens a lot in games where I can see he's attempting to run the ball. We've had some success. Maybe we're up 14-7. It looks like we're about to take over, maybe go up to 21-7. And so he sees the need to run the ball because he wants to run it, or for whatever reason, I can almost tell that he's trying to run the ball. First down, he runs the ball after having maybe a couple of carries in the last series with success. He runs the ball at once. It gets stuffed. He runs it again. It gets stuffed. Now, for about 2 quarters, he's just going to pass the ball. He tried. Maybe he comes back to it a quarter or two later or a little bit later. He gets stuffed again. He doesn't continue. Then he goes to a full-blown passing game. I don't have specific stats that back that up, but I've been watching and I see what happens. And then I also mentioned in my final post there just a bunch of facts is with when it comes to running the ball. You don't see him dominating teams, strictly by running the ball or by, being really run heavy and having a game like that. You don't see him finishing off teams in the fourth quarter by having two long drives where he runs the ball for 8 minutes in a row. Maybe it's happened a couple of times, but it's rare. You don't see on, him picking up the fourth and ones and the fourth and twos and the fourth and threes or the third and fours or third and fives or anything like that. Third and two, third and one, those crucial downs. And at crucial times, you don't see us picking them up with the run that often. A lot of times, he doesn't even go to the run. He'll pass the ball, which kind of reminds me a little bit about what Norm Chow used to do, too. He'd have fourth and an inch, and he'd pass the ball, and he'd fool the other team. But he would always pick up the first down, Norm. We don't always do that. And that's where those razor-thin margins are, where you're like, if we just got the one extra yard, we win that game. So I think it really comes down to his philosophy. I don't think he believes that running the ball is as good as passing the ball. And I understand it. It seems easy to complete a 7 yard pass versus a 5 yard run is harder. It takes a lot more work to do that. It could be the talent. It could be that he and his coaches don't really know how to coach the O-line that well. Now, last part of this, on the flip side, we've had actually a lot of success running the ball. I was noticing for the last couple of seasons, these running backs that I really loved running the ball very effectively, very high or fairly high, per carry average for the entire season. And in particular, in some games, a lot. So I was like, wow, we're actually pretty good at running the ball. Now, just add it. If you're that good, if you're having a game, you're averaging 7 or 8 yards a carry, just give me 20 more runs. That should be another 140 yards. Now, you and I both know that then maybe those averages would go down. You're probably not going to average seven for a season or anything like that. I mean, the top teams might, maybe like a Navy or somebody, but that's probably not going to happen. So that's where I say that I don't know if we're really great on the O-line or if Lincoln and or his coaches are good at teaching it, because he does do some good things by kind of fooling the other teams with the run, I feel a little bit more fooling versus just being a bull and running right at them. And he has success in the fact that we get a lot of yardage, but then he can never stick with it. When he decides like we're having success and he does run it a little bit more, as soon as he fails, he doesn't say, "Hey, I'm gonna run this ball." There's been several games where I've watched and said, "Hey, we're not going to win with what you're doing. Just even though you made some mistakes running the ball, please just stick with the run. Stick with it. Just, you're going to lose anyway." And almost every time we did lose those games. But he doesn't do that. He goes back to his core, his staple, which is passing the ball. And we lost a lot of close games over the years because of that. So that's my overall thoughts on it.
Okay, so I don't really disagree with a lot of things you're saying here, but the problem is, for me, it's kind of, you did address it a little bit, I mean, somewhat, but it's kind of different. It's a different topic. The philosophical approach and the play calling that you're actually seeing Lincoln Riley execute upon is different than whether or not he has the quality of offensive line to me. To me, these are
Agreed. Agreed.
two separate questions.
Yes.
So like, I don't. I know we've had games the last 3 seasons where we definitely struggled to run the ball at times. And UCLA 2 seasons ago, for sure, at Notre Dame, we struggled quite a bit.
Yes.
And you can go through the list. Now, I think it's fair to say that virtually every team in modern college football, if you're playing a power conference level, especially a winning team at a power conference level, you're going to struggle to run the ball at some point in time. I don't think you can just line up every down and say, okay, my 11 guys are going to beat your 11 guys on this run play to get 3 yards on a third and three. Maybe it works, but a lot of times it doesn't. And the reason I say that is if you just go to kind of like the rushing stats and you look at like how teams are performing versus power conference teams, like who what team led the nation in rushing yards last season against power conference teams amongst the power conference? It was Central Florida. Well, they averaged 5.3 yards per carry and they tried it 40 times a game. I mean, 5.3 yards per carry is not bad, but it's if you average 5.3 yards per pass attempt, you're in the toilet, right? So Kansas State had a nice rushing offense. But even if you look at like the top national teams for running the ball, Notre Dame, right? They're probably first and foremost because not only did they have two really good running backs, they had a quarterback who didn't throw very well and they had to rely on his legs at key moments. And they attempted about 30, a little more than 36 rushing attempts per game. And now they have a lot of ACC opponents, and some of them are not as quality. They average 5.25 yards per carry, which is nothing. It's not a bad number. It's good. It's a good number. But they're just not blowing teams off the ball. I mean, you can look at the scores of their games. They're so tight. Penn State, very similar numbers: 37 attempts per game, 5.11 yards per rush. Probably a little bit tougher schedule because they played Big Ten opponents mainly. Even though Notre Dame played some tough teams at the end of the season. So I guess what I'm saying is it's hard to identify when you're saying just looking at the offensive line, the blocking in a vacuum, it's hard to identify this is a good offensive line, this is not a good offensive line. And you can even go back to like some of the teams we saw with Georgia. If you go back to just a couple seasons ago, Georgia isn't running the ball as much as they used to. They've really started to rely much more on the pass for whatever reason. I don't know if it's a good decision or not, but they become more of a passing team as well. And I think a part of it is players have gotten bigger. There's a lot of transfers, so maybe teams are not as comfortable in their own offensive playbooks because there's so much personnel turnover. You're just relying on talent, and you're thinking, okay, well, maybe a pass play here is just safer in the moment. So I guess that's just all a prelude to saying, okay, if you look at if you go back to like the Pete Carroll offensive lines, I remember them very well because initially, especially when Keith Uparessa was the offensive line coach, it was pretty poor. It was actually very bad. It really didn't, and even through 2002, this is something people don't realize often. Do you know what for this 2002 season, this is our breakout season. Do you know what we average rushing the ball per rush attempt?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers were not that, but remember, they were trying to rush the ball more often. So your numbers will go down. So
Right, but it was
I
3.6 yards per attempt. That'd be one of the worst in the country today.
yeah, well, the first year, I know in 01, they
No, this is
were,
0-2. 0-2 is 3.6 yards per attempt.
yeah, but they were still in rushing yards per game. They were still higher than, we were 93rd, I think. And we were talking about that one particular year,
Right. Well,
which,
if you run the ball 40 times, yeah, I mean, but to me, that's just wasted downs. I mean, the team
yeah, but
didn't.
you're committing to the run, which you can't win a championship without committing to the run. And that's
Well,
just
I
the
don't. I disagree with that because we won the championship in 2003. We didn't commit to the run. I mean,
yeah.
we. If you look at the 2003 team in particular, that's a team that only ran the ball about 35 times a game. We had very even pass rush distribution. We did not have a consistent running game until midway through the season when Lindell broke out against Arizona State. This is not the second time. This is not the.
Yeah, I remember they were building, Chase. They were building during that time too. They were still building.
I get it. They're building, but that doesn't mean that the offensive lines are in place. And
Okay.
it is a whole there's a whole process of whether or not, how strong were these offensive lines. And I think, by 2003, I think the offensive line was pretty good. I can't say, though, the 2003, if you were to say what's better, the 2003 offensive line or the 2023 offensive line, when, so we're 20 years apart, 2023, very difficult season because essentially Caleb Williams decided he was not going to use his legs at all the entire season. So we were relying essentially all exclusively on running backs to get extra yardage. Very similar to how it was back when Matt Leinart was the quarterback. And you look at the rushing numbers. Yeah, I mean, we ran for, on aggregate numbers, we ran for more in 2023. But if you look at the actual per game or per carry, it was very similar numbers. And so, I mean, we'll run through them really quickly here. But so 2003, this is, kind of the breakout season. Lindell's a freshman, Reggie's a freshman. For the season, we won the national championship this year, by the way. We averaged 35 carries a game for 156 yards, 4.5 yards per carry.
How many passes, by the way, did we throw?
We threw 34. So it's almost exactly 50. It's
That's what I
almost.
mean. There's the balance I'm looking for. There's a
I
real.
know, but that's you're talking about a different topic. We're talking
No,
about
they
the
were. I think they're related, but okay, go ahead.
okay. So now what we if you look at 2023, we actually threw the ball exactly the same amount of times as we did in
You said what?
2003.
You said one less, though.
Well, no. What I'm saying is in 2023, we had just about as many pass attempts per game as we had in 2003. We just had a lot fewer plays overall.
Different year, but I want to know what the relationship was to the run. Lincoln Riley has never, not that at USC at least, ever run the ball as much as he throws the ball, ever.
At USC, correct? No,
Yes.
but right. But what I'm saying, if you just look at the respective running games in 2023, it's 28 attempts per game. So you're doing, 7 attempts less per game, 135 yards. So, it's only a 20 yard for 7 attempts, 30 and for 7 attempts less, 20 yards less per game, average 4.5 yards per excuse me, 4.8 yards per rush. So you're actually rushing for you're getting better bang for your buck on the rush attempt. Now, I completely agree. I don't like the play calling. I think he should have called more runs. The tricky part of 2023 was Caleb Williams would not run the ball at all. So we were in it. I mean, for the entire season, and this again, sometimes I don't think people appreciate this. The entire season, he ran for 142 yards the entire season. And that's in 12 games of play. So he's basically giving you 11 yards, 12 yards on the ground per game. So he's not really affecting the running game at all, except for when he scrambles.
He's avoiding a lot of sacks, though. He was
Well,
at
he is. He's avoiding sacks. So that's its own interesting discussion of the question of like if he wasn't who he was, how many sacks would he have taken? How many yards would he have passed for? I think those are open questions,
Yeah.
fair questions. But if you look at the offense on a whole, I mean, 20, that we're running for more yards per play in 2023 than in 2003. And if you're looking at the overall offensive output, in 2023, we're averaging 7.4 yards per play. In 2003, we're averaging 6.5 yards per play. I'm not saying that one offense was better that was better than the 2003 offense. That's not my point. My point is when you're looking at just the performance of the offensive line in isolation, I'm not sure you can pin this on offensive line poor performance, and I'm not sure you could say that the 2003 offensive line was better than the 2023 offensive line. To me, I think when you look at the 2002, I think for sure the 2022 offensive line was far superior to the 2002 offensive line. 2002 offensive line could not get a running surge all season long. That was a huge problem.
Had two the O2 team had two rushers at about 1,000 yards a clip, and I
No,
mean, remember
no,
that
no,
team
no, we
was
didn't. No, we did not. No, we did not. We
no that
had
was Sultan McCullough.
not 1,000 yards per clip. No.
No, no, they both had close to 1,000. I think they both had like 980 and 980 or something, or
No,
whatever.
so they combined for 1,500. Neither one of them averaged more than 4.5 yards per carry.
I'll have to look that up.
I'm
Maybe
looking
I'm.
right. I'm gonna tell you the stats right now. It's right in front of me. 100. This is Solton. 179 yards. Excuse me. 179 attempts. 814 yards. 4.5 yards per attempt.
Including the bowl game?
Including the ball game. Yes. Justin Fargas. 161 attempts. 715 yards. 4.4 yards per attempt.
Well, maybe I
So.
missed. Maybe I made a mistake
These
there.
guys were low. Now, it wasn't their fault because this to me was legitimately we didn't have the offensive line did not create holes. In fact, they didn't create holes until the Arizona State game in 2003, because I remember that was the first time in the entire Pete Carroll era, where we finally saw a running back exploiting really large holes in the defensive line and defensive front. So just to give you so an indication, the best rushing performance we had in those first two seasons when Pete Carroll was the coach, we had 201 yards rushing against Arizona State in 2002. We only averaged 5.3 yards per carry. That was the best we ever had for one game under Pete Carroll to that point. Even the Iowa Bowl game, where we ran for almost 250 yards, we ran the ball 50 times. We only averaged 5 yards per carry. So these are, relatively low efficiency rushing. Now, yes, in aggregate, we're getting big numbers, but in terms of efficiency, and it wasn't until that Arizona State game where we actually averaged 5.5 yards per carry for a game. So it took the third season of Pete Carroll being the coach before we have a game where our running backs averaged 5.5 yards per carry. And we had
And
our
this,
best that season against
my qualm with all this is that Pete Carroll always had a commitment to running the ball. He always believed in balance. I think the balance at USC, I think when you run the ball, you tire the other team out.
I
You
agree,
control,
but Upper
you
West,
control.
I completely agree with what you're saying. Completely agree. But
Right,
that's
but it,
a different question than the quality of the offensive line. So
you control the clock. Well, no, I've said this repeatedly, even though I pretty much know that the lines we have now are not as good those days. At least I believe that, let's put it that way. I still think I don't know how good the offensive line is because we did do pretty well on a per carry basis. The numbers are there. And plus, even if you said, even if you didn't tell me that, I looked it up because I was curious a couple of times and I was like, wow, these backs are really good, or the offensive line is good, or both. And then I was like, to myself, but how good really are we? Every time when we really need it, or when we need to have a game where we close out or run the ball, or we need key first downs or whatever, we're not getting as much from running, even
Well,
though.
let me respond to that a little bit, because I do agree that we're not able to just pick up yards whenever we want. I'm not sure how many teams can actually do that is the problem. And you saw like Notre Dame in the college football playoff. They essentially achieved this by doing these quarterback run plays on third and fourth downs.
That's committing to running the ball, in my
No,
opinion.
it is. I agree, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't achieve it with their running backs.
Well, you're also playing incredible teams at that point, too.
Well, they're playing good teams, but they're playing a lot of they're playing some similar teams that we play. They play Penn State. I mean, it's not like they're playing teams that we didn't compete against. And
Well, we play
Notre
Penn
Dame.
State at home, though. Home and away, it's different, not even the same team. You know how I feel about home versus away. They're playing Georgia. I mean, Notre Dame was a really good running
But
team.
when they played Georgia, though, that was a bowl game, right? They played them in a neutral site, right? So,
Right.
yeah, so I mean, a neutral site is a little bit different than playing a road game at Georgia.
That's much harder at Georgia. It's an automatic loss, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Even a neutral site game is usually an automatic loss. In fact, all games against Georgia, I would say, are pretty much automatic losses, except maybe one a year, maybe two,
Well,
maybe
yeah, I mean,
three.
now, yeah, well, look, we'll have to kind of see because I think that new, this is part of what I've been noticing, obviously. I mean, the four teams that played for the national championship the last 2 years were Michigan, Washington, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Of those four, there were three, all four are kind of either Midwest or Big Ten teams, which is really a huge shock compared to the last 15 years of college football when the South has just dominated.
Yep.
And I do think we might be going through a bit of transition. We've had a coaching turnover, obviously, in the South.
Yep.
Ohio State does not fit into, I mean, there are powerhouse, right? They're every year they're good. So they're a little bit different. But even Ohio State's had some of their ups and downs. They were really, they were clearly like a top five program pretty much every year. But when push came to shove, whether or not they were really a top three program for that season, they would struggle in those big kind of marquee games.
They were close. Well, to me, they were like, they every year they're like the second, third, fourth best team. Not quite. I felt they were the best team in the nation the year they lost to Georgia on the field goal at the end. I thought overall for the season they were the best team, but they missed the field goal and
You think
they
they were
didn't
the
get.
best? Because I feel like that was a great performance by them, but that was that 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 was when they were way ahead, you're talking about it, and
Yeah, they got
Georgia.
out in front and they were beating Georgia, but Kirby showed why he's really the best in the nation, or that I think Kirby Smart's the best coach in the nation. Maybe he was the best recruiter, maybe until NIL came along, still is probably, but I mean, so he kind of outcoached Day. Day had a little, he's a great coach, Day, but he's got that little thing that like holds him back, and he kind of finally overcame that a little bit last year, right at the end of the season, and took more chances and did what he was supposed to do. I agreed with him passing the ball a lot all over the yard in the playoffs. I mean, when you have Jeremiah Smith and these other guys, right, and he gets good, they get great quarterback play usually there, even though that quarterback they had last year was a cut a little bit below, still, he had to do it. And they, but I thought they were the best team in the nation when they lost to Georgia. Like, if they played Georgia 5 times, they beat them 3 or something out of 5. That's just an opinion after watching what I watch.
Right, no, I get it. I mean, I feel like that was a year where they had lost to Michigan, and that, kind of Michigan had beaten them handily at the Horseshoe.
In the last quarter. Yeah, Michigan's incredible on the road. By the way, with Michigan, they exude all the qualities that I like. Stop the run the ball. They're clutch. When they play their rivals, no matter where they play them tough and they can beat them. Originally, people hated Harbaugh because the first several years, especially against Urban Meyer, he had a lot of trouble beating Ohio State. And now the tables have turned, but we've seen that a lot. But we're getting a little bit off topic. We're talking about how good the O-lines are.
Right, and right. No, and I can, and I was just touching upon just
Here's why I'm
briefly.
wrong, okay? I'm going to play devil's advocate, like, against myself, because I'd rather be objective. My thing was, I said this about 4 times online, but I still said, here's what I think, but I might be wrong. I kept saying to myself when I saw, first of all, I loved the running backs we had the last few years, all of them, even the second string. I liked our running back. I think Riley does a good job at getting guys out of the portal, and he gets good players, great guys, hard workers. I love them all, down to the third string guys practically. But at the same time, I couldn't tell for 2 reasons. One, he would never really commit and have a big game where he'd really run the ball. Other than, again, maybe we did more against like a San Jose State, but against good teams, we'll say the top half of our schedule, the decent teams, he never commit to just having an incredible game. And most of the great coaches do have, or great programs do have, games where they just run the ball like crazy. So he did. That was one issue. And a lot of times when I felt like he's gonna run the ball, and we had a little bit of success, maybe in the first quarter, hey, we had like a 90 yards rushing in the first quarter. We're going to have 300 yards for this game. Then the second quarter, either the other team would adjust, or when he'd go to the run 2 or 3 times in a row and get stuffed, I would notice like, hey, they stacked the box. They got you. You can still come back to it. Remember what you did in the first quarter. And he won't come back to it. Or maybe he'll come back to it in the third or the fourth, get stuffed one more time, forget it. Then, of course, he does run the ball somewhat. He doesn't go 4 quarters in a row, no running. You've seen it. You says he runs the ball some, but he doesn't go back to it like the way I would want him to, especially when I see, like, come on, you're playing these teams like the Marylands of the world, or whoever they are, even Minnesota, not super talented teams. Impose your will against some of these teams. Really impose your will. Show me 250 yards rushing. Why? Not to win the game. I just want to see if you can do it. Because to me, to win a championship, you at least need to be a good rushing team. I'm not saying you have to have the number one run game in the country, but every team, including the 2019 LSU team, was a good running team. Everybody knows they were the best passing offense in history. They also had a good running attack. It just was overshadowed by an absurd passing attack. Ohio State runs the ball, even though they're great at passing. Urban was the perfect guy with balance for them. Saban became more of a passing guy because he realized he needed to do a little bit more passing, even though he is the best in the business at running the ball. Kirby's doing some of that probably now too, because you need balance. You can't just run the ball anymore. Not with the transfer portal either. That's the other issue with all this. Because you lack continuity, I think it makes it hard to do a lot of different things. So, and for an offensive line to block well in the pass or in the run, I think you have to play together for a year or two at least, and then you'll gel. Pass blocking, though, I don't know. They seem to usually be able to teach that a little faster, or you could just throw short passes. With running, it seems like the easy thing to do, but usually, even with running the ball, there's a lot going on, and it does take a while. So I don't know. How do you overcome that? You get a coach who can teach it immediately, I guess. or at least do something basic that works. And also, you try to find a coach that's just incredible. And usually, to me, if you're incredible at running the ball, you're usually at least decent at protecting your quarterback. So I just would like to see a little bit more. But no, I don't know if we were good or not. If he gave me 10 more rushes a game and he got another 70 yards out of it, and we go from 130 yards rushing a game in one of those years to 200, that's, if it's 7 yards a carry, 10 more, give me 10 more carries in some games, or then I would know. But right now, I don't know. I still, though, from what I saw when he really did want to run the ball and couldn't, I don't think we were that good, or he just doesn't believe in our O-line or his ability or our team to rush the ball. That's what I think.
Yeah, look, I agree with a lot of that. I don't really disagree with a ton of what you're saying. I think there is one issue to remember is that, first of all, the criticism of the choice between run and pass, I completely agree. He needs to run the ball more and just decide to do it anyway. I don't, to me, I don't like one of the reasons you don't see us like just commit to running the ball every single down for an entire game is I don't think our defense is good enough to be able to do that, because if you do that and you don't, you're essentially just committing to, I don't like the idea of committing to the what we call committing to the run. I like committing to the best possible play, and to me,
Agreed.
best
Agreed.
possible play
Yes, of course.
is going to change in every moment.
Right.
And I think Lincoln doesn't do that. I think he defers to the pass, not the best possible play. But you do get a lot of these games where, like, if we're team our defense is not able to, even this past season with the improved defense, we were not able to keep leads. I think we had a lead in every single fourth quarter
Yes.
except for the Notre Dame game,
I think so.
and
Yes, I believe that.
even that one we almost had a
We were like
tie in the
tied. We
fourth
were
quarter.
tied at one point, maybe, and that
Where
came in the
we're
fourth,
going
right?
for the tie, and that's when the pick six happened.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do that in the fourth quarter to when you're de now look, maybe our defense is that much better this season. It's possible it will be, quite frankly. I'm not sure. It's possible our defense will actually be significantly improved, mainly because potentially, our defensive line is that much stronger. I'm not saying that's for sure going to happen. I guess we can talk about that and first start talking about that in a few minutes.
Sure.
But it's hard to at least late in games make that commitment to running the ball on an every down basis, because a lot of times we were not, we were in dogfights and we had to score touchdowns. It would be like, we score other than the Minnesota game, which was really bad. We scored enough points to win most of these games, right? I
Yes,
mean,
agreed.
Washington, we should only score
Yes.
20,
We
but
Lincoln scores points, no doubt. He scores points. Go
Okay, so I
ahead.
think we fleshed that out. Do you want to, maybe about 20 minutes left on the pod, do you want to start talking about defense a little bit, maybe? Or
Sure.
do okay, so let's talk about this defensive line. Really quickly, let's just go over the personnel on the offensive line, because I just want to mention a couple things I didn't really
Sure.
fully, kind of we didn't you talked a lot about it. I didn't really talk much about it. So, we have the first five guys are supposed to be Page, Winfield, the transfer from Purdue, Reed, the center, the transfer from Syracuse, Alani Noah, and Tobias Raymond. Now, apparently, there's a fight between Tobias Raymond and Justin Tawanau for that
Yeah.
right tackle spot.
Yes.
I mean, everything is so hush-hush. Do you know anything about that, by the way?
I know that Raymond is a little bit like leading, probably because just a little bit more experience and, an extra year. But they're both like nipping at the heels of each other. But I think Raymond leads for it. But who knows? Over camp in the summer, either one could play. I don't think they're that far apart. I think it's very, very close. I know all, one thing I know about Raymond out of high school, he was definitely a pretty good sized project, we'll call him, no pun intended by saying good size, but he was a tall project. But they liked him. They thought, like, this guy, don't quote me on this. And I use the stars, and not everyone knows my star system, but I think everyone knows a 4-star is probably, if he's a real 4-star, he's a good player. I think that's what they thought of him as, potential of a 4-star. I know that for a fact. And then other guys were just projects where they're like, maybe I'm hoping, we had the other guy who was another 6'7" guy that left the program, and several guys on the defensive line that we brought in that maybe could do some damage. But I do know they liked him a lot. I definitely know they liked Taunu as well. So that's a nice battle. Let's put it
Yeah.
that way.
So
That's a hell of a
Talanu, I
battle.
think, that's a potentially interesting battle. Then you have
Benuelos.
Banuelos, who I think has been injured quite a bit, right? So he's heading into his third year in the program. I think they're hopeful with him. Alex Payne is going to be a true freshman. He's a highly recruited guy. Now, on the second team, you've got that walk-on center who started against Texas A&M, Killian O'Connor, right? And then Kalen Miller, I think, is also a walk-on, right? Is for the one from Calabasas. So there, it. I don't think it's as dire as some people say. It's like, oh, one injury and we're cooked. I think we could survive one injury. I
One.
think once you get to the second injury, you're starting to have issues. Now, there are the younger guys behind them, like Willie Washer and Aaron Dunn, but these guys are true freshmen. You have Saina, who has not gained enough weight so far, everyone thinks. So there are guys, scholarship guys behind them, but very much we have to see how these guys are going to perform. I think it's not going to be until next year with this new incoming class coming. Next season, the 2026 season, where we really have three solid, lines, a depth chart which goes legitimately three deep, is my guess. I don't think one injury is going to kill us. Two injuries could really hurt a lot, and three injuries might be lethal, but we'll leave that for that. Okay.
Then go ahead. Then you have the shuffling when you have the two or three in.
Exactly. And
Go
people
ahead.
are guys out of position and went. Now, if it's a guy like, can O'Connor come in and play center? He might be able to, even as a walk-on. I mean, he wasn't great, but he did okay against Texas A&M. So, that's where that is. Sometimes you never know. These offensive linemen are very hard to project as recruits. Them and quarterbacks, sometimes you just, you're, they're completely different guys than what you realize. And if a whole, everybody missed on a guy, that's not a huge shock when it comes to offensive linemen. You'll be surprised how many, and not you, but like any average person
Same
would be
person,
surprised how many, starting NFL linemen were not even, was like zero stars, didn't have any rating at all. Okay, so defensive line. So this is an interesting because the defensive line actually is already kind of like whether or not they're good is a different question because personnel wise we are deep. There is no question. This is a very deep defensive line, and if you talk about it in the interior, it's very deep. We have the transfer from Kentucky, Keyshawn Silver. Was originally a five star, has not played like a five star. We'll have to see how he plays. We have Devin Tompkins, who was kind of a rising player last season. This is going to be a big money year for him. He's a redshirt junior, potential NFL guy. And then behind them, we have the transfer from Georgia, Jamal Jarrett, who's this like gigantic guy. We'll see if he can actually play football. We have Jeedy Abasiri, who is originally came in as an end. He's put on some weight. He's still kind of a lighter frame, but he's not like super small. He's probably above 290 at this point. And then behind them, you have like, hey, I mean, I think it's a good sign when you have like Kobe Pepe is a third stringer. Like the guy, he could probably give you some downs, but he's a third stringer. Floyd Bouchard from Florida, who I think was. I guess he's Canadian. That's where he gets that last name. I guess he was only a three star, but very highly recruited three star. And then you have the guys behind them, the fourth in line of interiors, where you have Carlin Jones, who the staff was originally very, very high on. We'll have to see how that turns out. And you have Cass Jacobson. So that's a very interesting interior. And then you start looking at the ends. Obviously, Anthony Lucas back from defensive end. We have Cameron Fountain and Braylon Shelby coming back. They've moved Elijah Newby from linebacker over to end, which tells you they feel pretty, strong enough about the linebacker position. They want a little help with the pass rush. And then, of course, you've got the big name, Thanos, Jakeem Stewart, lurking in here probably as an end, a backup to Anthony Lucas. And then you have the other kid from Texas, who's not even on the current depth chart that I'm looking at, who I love, and I'm trying to remember his name. The
Wait,
fr was that?
Braylon, you talking about Braylon Shelby or who?
No. The incoming true freshman
For at what position?
at end at defensive end.
Hold on, I'll get it for you just a second.
Cordova, Gus Cordova.
Oh yeah, I like him a lot too. Agree,
Yeah.
agree.
So I mean, four deep at the tackle position, three deep at the end position. I think now we don't know. We don't know how these guys are actually going to perform on the field. But at this point, it's like to me, it's like no excuses time. These guys need to step up big time.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think it'll be a lot better the defensive line. I don't know if it's what everyone's talking about on the boards, like one of the best in the country, but I definitely think it'll be better. I mean, I don't know what to think of Anthony Lucas. He's got all the genetics, has been hurt some, and just did have to. Anybody, I give everyone a pass who had to play under Alex Grinch because I don't think people developed that well under him. Just put it, leave it at that. I've gone on ad nauseum about him for several years. And then he got hurt last year, and so he has the genetics. He's under probably better coaching right now. So will he play like a four or five? Will he play like a big time draftable player? I don't know. I'm gonna say 50-50, but I'll err on the side saying he'll get better for sure. I do the there's a couple players that people talk about that I've loved for a long time. I've always thought Tompkins could be a great player. I did watch a little film of him. He was a small recruit, had barely played high school football. And I said he had the quickness and the height and all this stuff. And you saw some ability, but really, really raw. They brought him in originally and they thought maybe he would develop. And so we'll see. Then the one other reason I really like him a lot is Lincoln Riley kind of got rid of a lot of players when he came in, people he didn't think were good football players or weren't trying hard or had a bad attitude. He only kept, I think, two players, maybe on defense. Maybe there was more on offense, but he kept Fabian Ross, I believe, and he kept Devon Thomas. And I was wondering, is he going to keep Devon? Probably not. He's still raw. He's going to dump him. Nope, he kept him. So that tells me he had great attitude, maybe some talent in there. He was one of the few guys that Lincoln Riley just kept. So that was huge for me because I was rooting for him because I always like when my predictions come true long term. And then towards the end of the last year, he started unseating guys that had been playing for 100 years of college football, like Nate Clifton. I probably felt bad for Clifton losing a job after he's been a multiple year starter in the SEC, but the best player has to play. And he started to show, like, oh, this guy's actually pretty good. Now it's switched the other way where they're even talking about maybe he gets drafted. That's one of those stories that you like to tell. So I'm a big fan. Another guy that I love. Is Jide Abasiri, very quick, very raw, strength, no body fat either. Probably does weigh like 295. I don't know his weight right now, but if he would put on 40 pounds of fat, he would still look just a little bit bulky probably, and he'd look like a relatively lean lineman. He'd have to gain like 70 pounds for him to look fat. He is very, very lean, which is rare for a guy at 290 or whatever his weight is right now. So I don't know if he'll be huge this year in terms of his play. I do think he's a good player, and so I'm excited about that. I know you've also talked about Carlon Jones. He was a guy who came on late. A few teams noticed him, and Ohio State was really high on him. And there was, I think, another team down in Texas, maybe A&M or somebody else liked him a lot towards the end. And we got him for whatever reason. And so hopefully he was had injury last year. Probably still very, very raw. So he's another guy. Silver, I think, will start at the probably more of like a nose guard type position, and I think Jamal Jarrett would back him up. I don't think they're both going to start. I think Keyshawn Silver is more proven. He hasn't been great at Kentucky, but he does have the genetics. So I don't know what to exactly. I just don't. I think those guys are unproven. So I think they'll be decent, and especially with good coaching, they're going to be good. But how good, again, like the offensive line, we don't know. I do think it'll be a lot better. People are very high on Cam Fountain. I didn't see that much from him last year, but I know everybody in the world is high on him. So I would say he's a player that I don't know as much about. I saw a few good plays, so I'm hoping that he breaks out. And he seems like he's already almost taken Shelby's spot. Shelby's been a little disappointing because he's got the muscles and supposedly the strength and speed and all this other stuff, but he hasn't really put it together. So We'll see. I mean, and if they're all going to improve, it's going to be substantially better. And if they all improve, I think we will just have a better defense because we haven't had that. And we have to see, the other thing we have to see is, can we get a pass rush? So that newbie move is really unusual considering there's not a lot of depth at linebacker. I'm hoping he's a guy that can come in and get a sack a game. Somehow he's that good. Why else would they move a guy like that who's actually very fast? As a linebacker and not very big, 6'3", 230 is like a nice sized linebacker. I'm hoping he's so special that he is the best pass rusher on the team, and that's why they're moving him, not because he's a weak linebacker or too slow for linebacker or whatever it is. I don't know what the move. I didn't never heard from my sources about why he was moved. I thought it was a strange move, but maybe he's a first round pass rusher at in the next couple of years. Who knows, right? But you're right, the depth is there. And you're right, Pepe is a decent player now. He was a very good Trinity League player. Didn't have the attitude for a few years, has gotten a lot better, and he's a decent player. And he's savvy. He knows how to play defense probably by now, and I think he's matured. So hopefully he can play, well in spurts. That's all we're looking. We're looking for, 10 snaps a game, 12, 15 snaps, 20 snaps a game maybe occasionally from him. That would be great. Or can he fill in when someone gets hurt? So, yes, I think the D-line's going to be a lot better. How good? I don't know. I'll go out. I'll say maybe 18th best in the country or something like that. Maybe from maybe the 70th best last year or something. Or I don't know. If you're only doing power four teams, maybe we were like 45th best or something last year. So maybe we'd be in power four teams 14th best. I don't know. It's hard to say. You have any thoughts on how good you think we could be?
I don't, that's, I think the problem with projecting so high is we don't have that dominant. I think you saw some dominant play from last season from Lucas before he got hurt. Now, I know he wasn't actually closing in on sacks, but he had like a lot of hurries. Like, I mean,
He
he was,
did. He did. He had a lot of hurries. Go
so
ahead.
he was definitely like imposing himself. What we don't have, I think, Devin Tompkins has shown himself to be a viable starting Big Ten level defensive tackle. The question is, can he take that to the next level? Do we have somebody that actually can take it to the next level on the interior, that they're disruptive, that they're actually causing such problems for the opposing team that you break into like a top 10? That we haven't seen yet. I think we have serviceable guys. We have guys that are legit at this level. The question is, are they legit plus? And
Right.
the only guy I kind of seem to do that so far is Lucas, and he's been hurt. I'm curious about guys like Jones. I looked at the Ohio State did want him. They brought him in for a visit in December, right before signing. That was Larry Johnson recruiting him. Before that, he had taken over the summer, the prior summer before his senior season, he was being recruited by Georgia Tech, Cal, and TCU. So you saw a leap in the level of schools going after him after that senior season. I think that's noteworthy. And then with like Bouchard, who I'm Bouchard, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. He has, I mean, it's funny because he was rated, his composite ranking is 635th. This just goes to show you where I'm like, where did these rankings coming from?
He's much better than that.
Here are
And
the here are the here are the visits he took. USC, Miami, Oklahoma, Alabama. If those are the four visits you're taking, you're not the 635th best recruit. I'm just telling you right now. I mean, that's just not possible. Those are the kinds of visits you take if you're a legit 200, top 250 recruit at a minimum.
yes.
So we'll see. Is he a top? Is that what he is? Is he a top 20, 250 recruit, or is he like a top 50 recruit? I don't know. We'll have to see
I
how.
think he's somewhere between 1 and 200, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Somewhere, maybe not. Maybe that's just a guess. Again, I make predictions. I like to go out on a limb and say, well, I think he's the 150th best. How would I know? He might be 50, 20th best. He might be 400th best. But I would say he was recruited like a guy who was the number 150 player in the nation or something like that.
Yeah.
Very, like, right close, very close to elite. He had like 40 offers. Everybody means automatically he must have a great attitude. Who has 40 offers? A few guys, right?
Yeah. That, I mean,
No, 40, but he had 30 plus offers. You get the point.
especially at his position, absolutely. Okay. I don't think we have enough time to talk about linebackers and safety. So maybe I was going to ask you one question before we adjourn, and then maybe we'll have you back to, finish off personnel and talk about some other things. If you go down the list of the top, on 247, the top 247 players, they're all their list of four stars on their composite. That list, I didn't count the exact number, but let's just say approximately 80% have already committed to a school.
Yes.
To me, this smacks of being an abnormality. I do not remember being in early July in the past and having 80% of all the fours and five stars already, taken out, committed. And the question I have for you is, of the guys that are committed, do you think we're going to see a flip rate on these guys that's closer to like 40%, 50%? Or are we talking about a flip rate that might only be 10% or even less than 10%?
I think it'll be pretty low because a lot of people have locked in NIL deals. I also think that USC has done a wonderful job recruiting these guys. I mean, they put a lot of effort into doing things the right way and also putting some artistry around it and making it really interesting. They have a lot of guys who are just good at recruiting. I think USC still does sell itself when you throw the NIL behind it with everything in Los Angeles and USC offers. Even if you're not the greatest recruiter, you get some good players. So I think we'll hold on to most of those guys. You might see some of them leaving, but other teams are going to have to find ways to sort of like buy out their packages. And that's not that easy to do. First of all, not every team can afford it, but yes, the top eight programs might be able to do those kinds of things. And why would some of those guys leave? Well, it does depend on the season. If we lose seven games, maybe 50% of the guys would leave. If we win, I don't know if this is an exact number. This is something I'm making up, but I think it would go something like this from what I've seen in the past. If we win eight or nine games, I think we keep all but, fifth, maybe we lose like 20% of the guys. If we win 10 games, I think we keep them all, minus a few guys who just decide that they're homesick or a billionaire comes through with a deal under the table for another couple million dollars from Miami or something and no one talks about it, or somebody decides they had such a good senior season, they get bought out in a way or something, or able to renege on their deal. But I think most of the guys will stick because the NIL is really good. The opportunities that they sell at USC, I like the fact that they're not really selling USC football only. It's almost like 50-50, like job opportunities, networking. The fact that we still do put lots of guys in the pros when you look back at even most of the positions, we've had some guys going pro. So, kids believe in that. We have such a long history. All these things, when you put them all together, the kids definitely want to go to USC. So I don't think it's going to be a huge turnover. But if we lose a lot of games, like lose half our games, I could see losing, two-thirds of those big recruits. Other than that, I think it's going to be more like anywhere from 10 to 25% loss, depending on do we win 12 games? Do we win eight? Something like that would be my thinking on it. I
Do
think
you?
NIL actually helps us hold on to them, regardless of our record, to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. And here's where I'm thinking too. Even if we went 6-6, how many of those kids would be willing to go somewhere else for less money? That's my question. Because I think that's the choice they're probably going to have to be made, probably going to have to make, because that's the choice they made in the first instance, right? For the most part, they probably were getting, if they're probably getting the best NIL offers, is my guess, from SC. Maybe not the very best in every case, but probably
Similar or better in most cases,
in
yes.
most cases. And I think when they didn't get the best, or when they passed on maybe another school that was similar, that school went out and made a substitute. They spent that money elsewhere. So my guess is most of this money has been the I think most of the big money has been spent. Now, is there still a little bit left? Possibly, but then I think you start to really get into this whole revenue share issue where there's a you have a pretty that cap on the rev share is really firm. There's no, it's two point, it's $20.5 million,
Yes.
and it's across all sports. So you're, if you've got a $2 million, some sort of $2 million NIL deal for USC for 3 years, I don't think you're going to find another school come in December and say, we're going to give you $2 million of revenue share for you to come here. That's just my guess.
No, it'd have to be under. I was saying the Miami thing. Sorry, Miami.
Yeah, no. You,
I
what
have
you're
to say
saying
be under
is
the table with the billionaire guy who's
exactly. I think it's
or
going to have to
something. I
be,
don't know, but
and I think that's going to raise all kinds of red flags, right? Because the money's got to be paid back in some way, so they're going to figure out right away, where's this money coming from? Like, it's going to be pretty, I think we actually have a system now where they're going to be tracking cash if you have to, like, somebody's got to pay this money off.
Well, yes, they took a job. Let's just face it, they're getting paid. They took a job and they got the money. They got everything locked in. There was a lot of work done for them to take the job. We recruited them versus just them interviewing with us. They interviewed with us a little bit in a way as well. Link has to love you. And if you take a job and you already get the upfront money, you have to fulfill your duties. So even if you dislike USC or dislike the program or don't think you're going to get developed, you have a commitment, so that's that. And it's harder to get out of that commitment. You chose the money, and you 50% also chose, you like the school a lot, of course, but a big part of your decision was the money. And with those top guys where the money's like almost equal, even the team, even if you, and Luke Wayfel maybe liked OSU just as much or more, maybe. I mean, I don't know exactly. I think he really liked USC. The only problem there was the distance, but still. Well, at the end, when USC really sweetened the pot, and we also just saw something like this with Feaster. We said, well, what the heck? We're like in third place and second place for some of these guys. What's going on? With Wayfel, there was the Penn State there with the brother and also Ohio State and many other programs too. And then in the final hour, we're kind of coming in and swooping down and taking these guys, So it's been very helpful to go from having weaker NIL to having good NIL. Plus, I do think because of that, it freed up Lincoln Riley to bring in more people to do recruiting the right way to the big schools like the Modern Days and all Trinity League and all the schools out west. I mean, and you get compounding with all that. When one thing goes well and then another thing goes well, everything goes well. So we're turning down a lot of players where we don't like the character. That's the final piece of it as well that I would say. I think they're recruiting people who are believers. And if you have people who believe in you, they'll stick with you for 5 years. If you lose every game, they're not going to give up. They believe in you. So there's people who, many people believed for years, even when he was let go, they believed in Clay Helton. Because he was good at convincing people that he's the man. He made millions of dollars at USC. So I think they've recruited really good kids, including a lot of guys who are not super highly rated by other coaches, even in terms of their play. And they were development projects. But SC likes those guys because they are the best workers and have the best attitude in the country. And I think that's a philosophy that we now have. Maybe it has something to do with Bowman, Chad Bowman doing all some of that. But whatever the reason is, I'd still rather have a 3-star who's a 6-star worker than a 5-star with a terrible attitude.
Oh, for sure.
Let's put it
Absolutely.
that way.
And by the way, just and very briefly, it's not like these 3 stars were not coveted. And in most cases, I mean, you just, Peyton Dyer from Georgia, who just w was like finished second in this whole, best performer camp thing. I mean, Georgia was all that was all after him.
No,
Georgia wanted him.
he's a 4-star. He's a 4-star. You know my whole thing about what 247 says is a 4-star, and what I call my thing, which is I go by what coaches say about the player. How do we know what coaches say about a player? Where do they visit? Where do they get offers? Where the what the articles are talking about somebody loving Georgia, Texas, and USC? That has to be a guy who's going to be a good player at Texas or Georgia for sure, and USC. So I doubt he's going to be an average player. Why would you go all the way across the? We're trying to get Brett Colleget from across the country. Why would we go there for an average, we'll call it 3-star type player? And why would all the other schools, he's gotten 38 offers. Why would these 5 or 7 schools that are top schools that he visited, minus Colorado is not maybe a top school, but that's the only other one he visited that wasn't like that great, I think. Why would they go all the way across country to get a 3-star? You can get one in Colorado, you can get one in Kansas, you can get one in New Jersey. You certainly get 1 million 3-stars right in the Trinity League, right?
Yeah.
So why do it? You could probably get one at a local, at like Dorsey High School probably has a 3-star lineman right in Los Angeles, right? So
Yeah, well, and that
go all
reminds
that way and give the best NIL package that you can give. He's like a high 4-star, that guy. They
you're
want
right.
big teams want him. So I'm not saying 247 doesn't have its value and rivals and everybody else, but you can tell what coaches like what players if you look deeply in their recruiting. And that's kind of how I rate players a little bit more. But I definitely take what all the sites say with a grain of salt, but I listen to, they have opinions and they're right a lot of the time. So you have that all together and then you can figure out what you think of a player yourself. Cannon Smith is a 3-star. I would call him a 4-star as another example. A lot of guys. Yes.
Well, and then you look like a kid like Malik Brooks from the kid from Downey that went that goes to St. Pius the 10th. Like, I don't, it's his video is very hard to even see, but like, for whatever reason, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia want to recruit this a defensive tackle from all the way across the country.
Yeah,
Like,
why?
why?
You need to go there.
And 24/7 has him rated the 125th best recruit in the state. And then you go to their scouting report, and there's here's the sum total of their scouting report on. Malik Brooks is a defensive lineman from Downey, California.
Right,
Well,
right.
have they actually evaluated him? How did they come up with that ranking? Right? I mean, I'd almost rather they just give the, if they didn't, if they actually haven't done the evaluation, I'd rather them just give them no stars and just say to be evaluated. We haven't evaluated him yet.
Right.
Than just sticking him with 3 stars and giving him some arbitrary ranking.
He's very low ranked for teams like Georgia and Alabama and whatever. A bunch of, oh, he only has like 8 offers because not everyone knows about him, and they're from like all good schools minus like one school, I think.
Okay. Well, I think we may. I think we came to a meeting of minds on a lot of stuff here. Great discussion. Thank you so much for being on. And it sounds like you'd be willing to come back again. I mean, I'd love to finish up the defense, and we can talk big picture stuff too.
I mean, I've done a lot of analysis on the season and I'm really excited. There's a lot of parity, like because of NIL, transfer portal and stuff. And I'm not sure I usually am so definitive on like who are the one or two teams that are going to win the championship. Boy, it's really hard to tell this year. There's about 20 good teams and there's a lot of competition. So it's going to be really interesting to pick who's going to do it. And so I think it's an exciting year in a way because of the parity. Lots of good teams, and USC might be maybe UC if USC can be low with the injuries, on the lines in particular, especially the offensive line. We could probably maybe we can do some damage. Schedule's a little bit more favorable this year. Maybe we can eke out a win, maybe against a road team like Oregon and Tech, excuse me, and Notre Dame, and then got a really chance for an interesting season and second year starting with the quarterback. So it really is exciting, and there's just so much energy around the team. Got to carry that into the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it could be an interesting year for a variety of reasons. I mean, I think, the schedule as a whole looks much more manageable. Unfortunately, maybe between last season and this season, the two toughest games are on this year's schedule. That's the one tricky part, right?
Notre Dame
Notre
and at
Dame and at
Oregon.
Oregon. So,
Yeah, ouch.
ouch.
Those are tough. Those are
Gives
tough.
you if you lose drop those very small margin of error to sneak into the college football playoff for a variety of reasons. But we'll talk about that in a future podcast. Thanks so much for joining. And until we talk again, fight on.
Fight on.